Attention all groups. This is Admiral Akbar with your Armada advice. When overlapping a ship, you might think that the last ship you overlapped is the one that will take damage from you, but you would be incorrect. It is often the case that it's the last ship. However, it is the closest ship you overlap to your final position that takes it. This can lead to strange situations where you overlap one of your ships at a higher speed, then at speed one overlap an enemy vessel. But back at your starting position, your own ship is the closer, and therefore takes the damage instead of the enemy you are trying to hit. It doesn't happen often, but it does happen, so plan your ramming courses carefully. Assume attack coordinates, and may the Force be with you.
At last we will deal with these rebel scum. You may fire when ready.
Welcome, Commanders, to the 26th episode of Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast. I'm Jim.
The Corellian conflict has begun once again!
At around the table, we have a pretty solid group of players, so we've started the campaign up for another round. We have one 4-player and one 6-player game going, and we're just now into turn 2 the week I record this. I'm in the 6-player game, looking to take those rebels to Tarkin Town, and we've had a really close first round, and it's still anyone's game. On the 4-player game, though, the Imperials both got tabled by their opponents, and both of them are considering retiring their fleets. Yeesh! We tried to time it so that the campaign would end just as Wave 7 released. It doesn't look like we're going to make it, but we are going to allow the new stuff to be taken, so only one more week before Tarkin gets his sovereign to assume direct control. Wait, that was another sci-fi property. Last time, the Profundity article dropped just as I was about to record, so I couldn't get into it. But this time, I can. In fact, since they sent out some promo copies to Krabok for his YouTube channel, all the cards have been spoiled by now. It seems the theme of this wave is big ship love and squadron hate, which is all right by me. While I love having a rebel bombing wing, I am also not a fan of rebel swarm lists, so giving the ISD some much-needed attention to make it a better choice suits me just fine. I'm very much looking forward to getting some hardened bulkheads on my ISD next week, so that Ardadel's hammerheads can't ram me to death like they did the last game. And relatedly, if you're listening, Fantasy Flight, now that I'm back on the stick, I will totally talk up your releases on here and put up blog posts on my site if I were to get any promo copies of things. Hint. Hint. So, Wave 7. Let me just say that I love the MC-75. It is a monster for the Rebels, and Lord help you if you get double-arced by it. Speed 3, 5 dice in every non-rear arc, and either double ordnance or one each of that, turbo lasers and ion cannons, just makes me wonder which I love more. I'm just going to have to be careful not to load that sucker up too much and make it way too pricey. With the MC-75, I think a double Mon Cal list is finally viable. Two pickles were too slow and could be outmaneuvered, and liberties were too vulnerable to side shots without having support. With this, either could work as the 75 matches the liberty for speed, and also complements the 80 very nicely as well. With the Mon Cal Exodus upgrade, suddenly engineering tokens can strip off damage cards, keeping those big ships alive that much longer, to say nothing of keeping a token on MC-30s that fly in a pack. Kaitkin and Sholan will be a mainstay in any Akbar fleet, allowing you to re-roll any color of dice, as well as finding a home with Sato as well. Sadly, they can't be taken on an MC-80, but I hold out hope for a Minister Tua-like officer eventually that will give Rebel ships a weapon team slot. Yeah, that would give Yavaris a flight controller's option, but a kid can dream, can't he? There's two cards that I think need a special look. The first is Wide Area Barrage. A lot of people got really excited about this, I think because they were thinking that it worked for total damage, instead of just black hits and not crits. The most you could get out of it without other upgrades is 2 damage, and with expanded launchers or external racks, you can get it to 3, which isn't a lot, especially when you think that a ship hit by it gets to choose which hull zone takes it, and also needs to be at close range. So you're putting that ship in tight quarters with multiple enemy vessels to get it to work. I think you should get excited about it still, though, and here's why. While the average upgraded damage you can get out of it is 3 hits, that is a potent strike against key fighters in a squadron wing. 3 damage will cut down Howl Runner or Mauler Mithil, leave A-wing aces near death, and put serious hurt on Dengar or any X-wing ace. Since it's not an attack and just suffering damage, they can't defend against it, so it goes right past Scatter. On that same note, a non-Bright Hope flotilla will be 1 ram away from destruction by that hit. Then you can look at using Rebel tricks to enhance it further. A Sato MC-30 or MC-75 can convert those other 2 dice in their arcs into black as well, putting you to a maximum of 4 damage, a 1-hit flotilla killer that, again, ignores Scatter. The other card is the Raid Token Generators, so I guess it's technically 2 cards, but they're Jyn Erso and the Gauntlet Fighter for the Imperials. Raid tokens seem pretty powerful, locking down types of orders. This could be very powerful, keeping a carrier from using squadron orders or big ships from repair or navigates. Having it on a fighter would, to me, mean the end of no fighter builds, since you'd want to have at least a couple to guard against gauntlets showing up and wrecking your day. But raids would be too powerful if they didn't have a way to get rid of them, and it looks like the way to do that is to resolve an order of that particular type. That means that a token will pull it off as long as it matches the raid token that's on there, which is trivial to acquire currently, most easily with a comsnet transport. And those are seen a lot right now to begin with, so if that's true, they're going to become even more common. I hope that it's errated into only a dial sufficing to cancel a raid. That way there's a real cost to it, and it could shake up the meta a bit like I think it's supposed to, instead of being kind of a big yawn. So, it occurs to me that last time I could have gone into a little more depth with covering some examples when to use bigs and when not to. So here goes. For my examples, I'm assuming Biggs is between 2 other escort fighters. Remember that he can shift damage from one of them to the other, not just from or to himself. I also don't have a hard mathematical rule to go by. I just trust my feelings. Firstly, I mostly like transferring damage to the other escorts. The reason for this is that it tempts enemy players into doing their big hits on them once the hull gets low enough. Then I just let them die. My general rule is to move damage to the escorts once they're down to around 3 health, then start moving to Biggs until he's around 3 health. So, I get that that's a little squishy. Here's an example. One of the escorts is at 2 health and takes 2 damage. Biggs is at 3 health, and I really don't want him taking any more because the other escort is also at 2 and probably going to drop soon as well, which will leave Biggs all alone. I could transfer the damage to the other escort, leaving them both alive at 1, but the next damaging hit will destroy either one of them. I could just let the one escort die and leave the other intact at 2 health, but let's think about that. Letting this one blow up is 1 attack absorbed. Then the other one going down will be another attack for a total of 2 absorbed. If I transfer, that's going to leave them both at 1, so they can't take any more damage without being destroyed. But if I did, that means the current attack is absorbed. Then it will take 2 more attacks to destroy both of them, for a total of 3 absorbed attacks. And that's totally better. Doubly so if my next activation is going to be a squadron command, so I can let those escorts go down swinging. Here's another one. Same situation, but let's make the other escort only have 1 hull left. Transferring to it will destroy it and save the other one, but we're still losing a squadron either way. Here's what I look at to make that decision. Positioning. Is the squadron being attacked locking down some important squadrons that want to do something else, like bombing my ships? Is the other squadron locking down more important things, or is it either off on its own or engaging things that have already activated? If that last part especially is a yes, probably the reason why that escort is at 1 hull, then I definitely want to transfer and kill it instead. Leaving the more annoying of the engaging escorts could be crucial, and force your opponent to attack, then move up to free their squads instead of moving, then firing. That wasted attack could save you a ship or get you a victory token. Of course, in that situation, if both escorts were locking down important things, you could always transfer to Biggs and keep them both around one attack longer. I hope that those gave you some more concrete examples of how to use him. Now, after the break, we'll start some squadron coverage with the Empire's Valen Rudor and good old Rogue Squadron for the Rebellion.
When Jim wants to play Armada, he heads down to Round the Table in Lynnwood, Washington. They have board games, a friendly and helpful staff, food, ice cream, and a rotating selection of beer and ciders, so you can loosen up and fly casual. Thursdays are X-Wing and Armada night, so come on down for a glass and a game and say hello. Find out more at www.rttgamepub.com.
Welcome back. Valen Rudor is, to put it mildly, a jerk. Among our group, we refer to him as Poop-Eating Grin, except we're adults and don't say poop. Valen's basic stats are a standard TIE ace, but differ in one respect. He's got the blue anti-ship, 4-speed, 3-hull, scatter-brace defense suite, swarm ability, but he has 3 black dice to attack squadrons instead of 3 blue. This right here is what makes him dangerous when coupled with his special ace ability. See, Valen can't be attacked if his attacker is engaged with another squadron. Any squadron. He basically makes every other friendly fighter around him into an escort, just for him. Then sits back and plugs away with his 75% likely to do a hit each black dice. Since he can't be attacked, this includes counter, so he can't be hit at all until everything else is gone. This makes him a real pain to deal with, both in his survivability and his damage output. He's not perfect, of course. Ships can still hit him normally, so concentrated flak will eventually take him down once you get past his scatter. Careful positioning so that you're not engaged with anything else will allow you to shoot him normally. And black dice aren't going to be rolling any accuracies, so he's useless against scatter aces, aside from just wearing them down. So obviously, when you use him, you'll need to make sure he's got adequate coverage from getting hit from an open angle, or make sure you've locked down everything around him. While you could run him with some cheap ties for coverage, they're weak points that will fail quickly. Valen really likes strong defenses around him to thrive. So TIE Advanced are good to use with him, naturally, but even TIE Bombers will do in a pinch. He works really well with Bossk, as they have to shoot him and buff Bossk before they can take down Rudor. Another solid option is Sienna Ree. She only has 3 health, but she has scatter, counter, and all attacks against her are obstructed. Dengar also works well with him, making your opponent take more damage from the stuff they're trying to kill first. Amazingly, he's the ace that comes closest to finding a use for the YV-666, since being heavy doesn't matter, they still screen him. However, they're still half his speed, so they limit him quite a bit. Still, using a couple of them plus him in a close-range anti-squadron role is a decent idea. Without intel, bombers engaged with Valen can't attack the ship, and they can't wipe out the non-heavy fighter that's engaging them without chewing through all that heavy 666 hull first. He's a squadron that you just can't ignore, because then you're ignoring whatever else he has leading the way. He's the knife in the back that you see coming, but you can't stop. He's Valen Rudor, and he is a total jerk. Just hope he's on your side. Now, for that most famous of Rebel squadrons, Rogue Squadron. Rogue Squadron is the non-ace X-Wing unique, and it's solid. For just 1 point more than a standard X-Wing, you lose escort and gain Rogue, fittingly enough. Other than that, it's a normal X-Wing, 3 speed, 4 blues, and 1 red against squadrons and ships respectively, with bomber. Rogue can be handled mostly like a standard X-Wing, but with the exceptions that you don't need to set aside a squadron activation for them, and they don't need to be in range of a ship to move and shoot. This might seem like common sense, but for an X-Wing, it's a big deal. Being off the chain like that allows possibly the best all-around fighter type in the game to go hunting for targets. It's not going to go screaming around the battlefield at speed 3, but it can hang back a bit before hitting the back of a bomber wing, or it can keep pace with slower ships and continuously bomb them. Now, it has no defense tokens, so you can't go after any big squadrons, and a red die won't consistently do a lot without a bomber command support. But Rogue Squadron is a threat that also can't be ignored. Well, I mean, it can, but even without support, the threat of that plucky little squad potentially getting that double hit or throwing 4 blue dice at a key ace has to be dealt with in some fashion. Rogue Squadron is not only a decent threat, but is also a great distraction, sending it off on its own to see what you can draw off to deal with it. Your opponent is either going to devote some amount of resources to deal with it, or let it go, and allow you to have Rogue rejoin the squadron battle at an opportune moment, or start hitting a vulnerable flotilla to start forcing it to spend its scatter after taking an attack from a ship. It works best with the standard X-Wing enhancers, Torn Far, Bomber Command, Jan Ors, etc. It's no YT-2400 for being a free-roaming unit, but it's a couple points cheaper and works well with a grouping of those YTs at a slight savings. Just remember that, unless you're running a bunch of rogues with it, all doing their independent thing, when you put it on the table, you need to make a decision about whether you care if it lives or dies. You can do either, depending on your game and the situation, but stick with that choice. Either you care about it, and need to watch out for it getting overwhelmed by other squadrons before it accomplishes whatever mission you want it to do, or you don't care and can play a little more aggressively with it, trying to draw attention, and if it survives or gets ignored and does some other damage during the game, well, that's just gravy. Don't be too aggressive with it, though, as like I said, it's still just 5 hull with no defense tokens. If you want it to make an attack run, make sure that you've either engaged your opponent's fighters first with your own squadron wing to prevent them from just mobbing Rogue and letting your squadrons come to them, dividing your wing into Rogue and the rest, sending Rogue one way and the main wing the other towards some tasty target, and force that hard decision of which to go after, or split their forces, is dangerous. I guess what I'm saying is that since it can run unsupported and has one of the best all-around squadron stat lines in the game, so Rogue Squadron offers a lot of flexibility at a pretty affordable price. However you decide to use it, it's going to get results. Well, that's it for this episode. I kind of wrote myself into a corner by only doing one ace or unique at a time in that last episode. So next week, I'm going to try to start getting through the ace and unique for 2 different squadron types. Until then, you worry about those fighters, and I'll worry about the tower. Shall we, Admiral?
It's a wrap!
Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast, can be found at www.firewhenreadypodcast.com. Talk to me online on Twitter as @ArmadaJim or by email at jim@firewhenreadypodcast.com. All celebrity voices impersonated, all rights to the spoken content of this podcast are reserved.